When silly premises are made, you come to silly conclusions. I believe this, that there are laws that govern everything. There are laws of time. An hour takes 60 minutes to come to completion. There are laws of physics. There are laws of geometry. There are laws governing everything in the natural world. You know what we call the laws that govern behavior? That's called the moral law. And I believe that a lot of therapies fail because they fail to use that word or pay any attention to it. Wherever you hear the word moral, you simply think of human behavior, human choices. And I believe that there are a set of principles governing human behavior. If we keep them, certain things are promised. And if we break them, certain things are promised. The astronauts just went up there in that space shuttle. They went up with all of the billions of man hours of study and preparation behind it. All of those hours were based on a belief that the laws of physics and gravity and geometry and astronomy and weight and size and shape and everything, heat, all of those laws would hold. And because they banked on those laws remaining, that whole trip went exactly as planned. When those men first went to the moon, that ship was zinging through space at 17,000 miles an hour, a minute or a second, whatever the speed was. And those fellows, at the right time, they slept confident that when they woke up, the same laws would hold. That's the same way here. There are laws of human behavior. What is the answer to the problems that our kids have to face? And they are dead serious. Gosh, they're serious. Some youngsters in the ninth grade were asked, why do people use drugs? And these were their answers. Medication. I think even youngsters are well aware that some of their schoolmates have diabetes. Some of them are epileptic. Some of them have to have medication for this or that or the other. Just to get high. That's a kind of a universal reason why people use drugs. To be cool, to get rid of pain. To experiment. Curiosity leads to experimentation. Peer pressure. God help us. Peer pressure. I think peer pressure forces us to do so many things. So many things. Family problems. A lot of kids are from busted homes. We have the phenomenon of divorce today, which is very, very, very high. Somebody said by 1985, over 50% of American children will be from broken homes. To calm nerves, to escape, friends do it. People use drugs simply because they like it. And then even the kids said, one reason for using drugs is because they're addicted. To work better, to be alert, simply because they're bored. To hurt themselves or to hurt somebody else. Sometimes the only way I can get attention is to hurt myself. Then people will look at me. To get in a good mood for a dare, afraid to stop. That's a very real one. Afraid to stop. Or, and we all know about ODs, to commit suicide. The basic reason why anyone uses a drug is to change the way he feels. I feel this way, and I want to feel that way, and this chemical is going to put me from here to there. And after a while, chemistry becomes the passion of my life. Studies go, friends go, parents go, obligations go, responsibilities go. Get that drug to feel better, feel better, feel better. I want to feel better. But I want to feel better now. And the ads that we look at and allow our kids to look at just grind that in. There's an ad for an over-the-counter sleeping potion. Shows two houses. A light goes on at 3 a.m. You hear the dialing of a telephone, and then the lights in this house go on. He answers it. I can't get to sleep. What do you use? This can be the answer. such and such a drug, which is what everybody uses. And we're educated that way by the drug companies. Do you want to change the way you feel? Chemistry. Chemistry. Dump a chemical into you. Dump a chemical into you. Well, I believe this, and I believe it passionately. The basic problem, alcohol and drugs, and all of the things that flow from it. But I believe that chemistry is one of the basic problems that our young face. And the answer is to try to live some other way, according to a set of principles that will bring more happiness than chemistry will. And these are the laws that govern human behavior. The principles of living, and they are stated most beautifully and most effectively and most powerfully in a therapy that came into being in 1935 for the problem of alcoholism. A man by the name of Bill and another man by the name of Dr. Bob, a stockbroker and a physician, brought into being Alcoholics Anonymous. And they have 12 principles according to which they try to live. And boiled down, I won't go into those, all of those 12 steps. That's for another time. But boiled down, it comes to 6 words. And these are the words of Dr. Bob, one of the co-founders. Some of the steps are paraphrased in these words. Trust God. The middle steps, clean house. And the last step, help others. And that's the whole key to human existence. You've heard me say this time and time and time again. Human happiness is available only through commitment to others, because the man who started AA began with this question to his physician. I wonder if I might not get sober by trying to help another drunk. Human fulfillment is capable of achievement only through commitment to others. Now, that's been proven. That has simply been proven. Because to try to get happy any other way results in disaster. And I think that that is being proved by the craziness of the me generation type. We have more neurotics today than ever before. I've said walk down any street in any town and shake any hand. It'll probably belong to a counselor or a counselee. I think the whole country's in treatment for something. Simply because we are so aware of our own feelings instead of trying to get into the feelings of others. Now, for those of you who are young, what's your job on earth? Same as anybody else's. Number one, to grow up in order to love. We are built, we are manufactured by God, we are made to love. Now, in order to love, I have to be free. Free from what? Free from selfishness. And the most painful part of life is going through that period that you call adolescence, which is going from puberty to adulthood. Adolescence is horrible. And I think too many of us adults forget what it was like. You know, so the human mind and the human heart is built to remember the good things. Just remember the good things. And we always speak of the good old days. Well, if you sit back and think long enough, you'll probably come up with the same tune I've come up with. I wouldn't want to go through my adolescence again for $1 million. Somebody once said the good old days were rotten. I'm not saying that there were not good times. I'm just saying that if we sit back and coldly, intellectually look at the months and the years of our youth, we'll see all the pain that was involved there. The loneliness, the unspeakable desire to be wrong, I just want people to like me. And so I'll do almost anything to get them to like me. And that's where the peer pressure comes in, and that's where we begin to prostitute, often, the principles that we were given when we were younger. Adolescence is that period of adjustment from realizing that I am the center of my world in which all of the attention comes into me, to a realization that I'm just a spoke in the wheel of humanity. I have to learn to get out of self and to get into others. And this is why the youngster who is in that can shift from being the most outgoing kid in the block. He watches 20 cars in a day and says, ah, oh, that's just my good deed. And switch in a minute to being the most selfish little thing that ever happened. So often youngsters will sing of love and refuse to clean up the room. This is not condemnatory. I'm just saying this is one of those periods of horrible adjustment that people have to go through. So what are my obligations? It is my obligation to grow up. I will spend, all other things being equal, I will spend most of my life as an adult, and I've got to prepare for that. And it's awfully hard. I can remember, believe it or not, I can remember asking, there's one of the Fisher boys, they were second cousins of ours. I had just finished the second grade, and it was the first day of school the following September, and I asked him, what's the third grade like? Oh, he said it isn't too tough. I was making a tiny little transition, one grade to another. And then you come to one of these big breaks, you get to the eighth grade, you're going to graduate and go into high school. And there's fear in that. Then you become comfortable in high school, and then after a while that's at an end, and you have to go to college. Well, boy, this is the grown-up world. What do you do here? How do you act? What do you say? What do you do? And we need principles to live by. Real, honest to God, absolutes that we can hold on to, not stuff that'll switch from day to day. You know what results? When we give in to believing this today and its opposite tomorrow, we become leaves in the stream. Where the water goes, that's where the leaf goes. And we all know people like that. In fact, perhaps at one given time or another in our own lives, maybe we were leaves in the stream. But where do these principles come from? I think that we have to go back to a realization of what we are and who we are. Now, once I get a real grasp on that, I can go on from there. Do you know what it means to say, I am a human being? We are the masterpieces of creation. A couple of years ago, I was on an airplane between San Francisco and Baltimore, and I sat beside Dr. Edward Teller, the father of the H-bomb, one of the greatest minds of the 20th century. I didn't even dare speak to him. Honestly, I did not initiate a conversation with him. He spoke to me just as we learned, and he's a very gracious gentleman. But I watched him as the flight went along. He opened his briefcase, and he began writing formulae on a piece of paper, M minus R to the F squared. And I thought, good Lord in heaven. It's one of these intellects that's so far above the rest of us that it's unbelievable. He's a chunk of God on earth. But he's one of those that God raises up to show us the brilliance of the human mind. That space shuttle that went up, that was put there as a result of human intelligence. We rule the world. Now we mess up, of course. We make mistakes, of course. And every now and then, God wants to show us who's boss by making Mount Helens belt or firing a hurricane at us, you know, to let us know that there are some things we can do and there are some things we can't handle. But nonetheless, the human intelligence is a reflection of the divine intelligence. That's what I am. That's what I am. I am a reflection of perfection itself. And I've got to begin there. Because that's the basis of my self-respect. That's what I am. I am not meant to go through life with that brain drugged and in a primitive state. It's the saddest thing on earth to look at a youngster, bright, physically beautiful, just sitting in a corner staring and blinking. You're all familiar with this. I can remember about my own father before he died. He was in his 80s. My dad could recall things that he did as a little kid. He could recall things about relatives and so on, and he couldn't remember yesterday.
Do you know what youngsters who are paralyzing their brains and deadening their memories with drugs are doing? They are wiping out their youth. There will be nothing to recall when they get into their later years. This one of the girls down there in Georgia, she said, I'll never forget as long as I live. I went to visit a friend in a hospital, and I smoked a couple of joints on the way home. And she said, my mother said, well, how's your friend? I said, what do you mean, Harry? You just came from the hospital. She said, I had no recall. I did not remember being in the hospital 10 minutes before. She said, even today, and it's something like 5 or 6 years since she has had any chemicals of any kind, she said, it frightens me what has happened to my memory. Once I know what I am, a human being built in the image of God, I have to have some sort of respect for myself, or I can't expect respect from anyone else. I can't. I just can't. And so what I have to nail into myself is a belief in what I am worth. What am I worth? What are you worth? What are you worth? I'll tell you this. And I have looked many a youngster in the eye and said, if you believe you're a garbage can, that's exactly the way you'll treat yourself. If you believe that there's nothing more in store for you than being a dumping ground, then you'll spill garbage into yourself without a second thought. And if that's what you think of yourself, that's probably what I'll think of you too. I will know what you think of yourself by the way you treat yourself. And that's the sad thing. But to watch a youngster who comes into treatment, please listen to this, it is so important. Let's get back to those two girls. I said, what made you want to get well? Why did you respond to treatment? And they both said, guilt. Guilt. God, we were living a life of filth, and we just couldn't stand it anymore. Just couldn't take any more. This man out in Ohio who has a treatment center for youngsters, he said, he asked them to just use words, not whole sentences, not whole paragraphs. He didn't want biographies. What do you think of yourself? When you think of yourself, just write down the words that come to mind. There were 21 youngsters, fellows and girls. There were a whole lot of words that each put, 8, 9 words. One word was found in every single one of those 21 sheets, guilt. Guilt. You know, the vicious circle and cycle of any addiction, the only thing that will relieve the pain of the addiction or the abuse of drugs is more of the drug that causes it. Why do you feel guilty? Because of the things you do under the influence of the drug that you took in order to make you feel good. That's the paradox of all things. None of it makes sense. None of it makes sense. And you can always tell, you can tell what people think of themselves by the way they treat themselves. You see the beauty of being involved in this world of alcoholism and drug abuse and drug addiction is being able to hold out a way to regain self-respect. Because when you see a life that has been turned around, and it was just a couple of weeks ago, this Dr. DuPont, he's from one of the National Institutes of Drug Abuse, he had a couple of young people on with him who had been users, abusers. You see, you just heard them talk. They were in command of themselves now. And they looked with real sorrow on those who are still in the drug world. I remember asking a young friend of mine who happens to be here tonight, we were talking about values and so on. He said, well, I guess what you're saying is all well and good, but he said, I used to be down in the ghetto in Baltimore and a couple of other cities, and he said, there are a lot of people down there. He said, God, they become prostitutes just to survive. He said, I'm not sure they'd know what you were talking about if you mentioned values. And I don't know, something began to gnaw at me inside. I heard what he was saying, but I knew that somehow or other values is the only answer to that thing. And just before I could come to the articulation of the statement that that's exactly where values are needed, it was backed up on a PBS TV show. I think it was Bill Moyer's Journal. And it had to do with what he called the cancer that is sweeping through the Bronx. These old apartment houses that used to be the apartments of very well-to-do people, beautifully structured buildings. They're being burned systematically, block by block. And while he was interviewing an old Irish maiden lady who had spent all of her life working in a hotel as a maid, a couple of burglars were burglarizing her apartment upstairs. And when it came to light and the cops came and so on, they rushed upstairs with the cameras. And it showed this poor old soul just absolutely devastated. I mean, this was the type of neighborhood that it was. What happened? Some of those there, some Hispanics, just banded together and they said, we will survive this thing. And they begin buying these apartment houses, gutting them, and redoing the whole things to build homes and apartments for themselves. And they are hiring carpenters, plumbers, roofers, and so on, to teach them how to do this thing. And it was a young 19-year-old girl laying the tile in the floor of an apartment. And Mr. Moyers was interviewing her. He said, you're spending some pains with that. She said, yes, I sure am. She said, I want this to be the best floor in the building. And the professional carpenter who was showing her all of this was in the background. He said, why? The girl said, because it's going to be mine. I was just a couple of weeks ago down at the Naval Academy in Annapolis, and I was talking about values and principles and so on. To two men, one was a full captain, one was a commander. I had just given a talk on alcoholism to the midshipmen, and we were at a little reception up in what used to be the Naval Academy Library. And I didn't know these men at all, but they came up, started to talk to me, and one of them said, you know, his name was John, and the captain's name was Bob. He said, you know, Bob and I didn't drink for 6 solid years at one time. We quit drinking. I said, oh? He said, yes, we were in prison in Hanoi at the time. They were POWs. So we got talking about values and so on. You know what John said? He said, Father, when you are stripped of everything, everything, and you are tortured, and you are asked to give up a lot of your beliefs and so on, he said, when the only thing that you own is half of your underwear, he said, you better have a grab bag of values that you can reach into, or he said, you'll die. So it boils down to basics, doesn't it? What do you think of yourself? What really do you think of yourself? I remember a couple of years ago, it was about 2 years ago, I was in the Chicago area, and a young woman, came up to me after it was a banquet at which I had given a talk. And she came up and said, how do you do? She said, I had to meet you. You helped me to get well. She had been through treatment somewhere. She said, you know, Father, I used to sell myself because that's what I did. But she said, I sold a pint of my blood to buy a ticket to this dinner. I just stared at her. She said, I'm grateful to be here and I'm happy to have met you. And she walked away. About 2 months ago, this is 2 years later, it was at that exact same group. They had me back again to talk. And this lady came up to say hello. I didn't recognize her at all. She had to tell me who she was. She said, I'm the one that sold my blood to get a ticket to this thing 2 years ago. She said, you know, Father, my husband divorced me since I saw you last. But she said, that's all right. I'm able to cope now. I'm going to school. She was studying something. But she said, you know, I'm happy now. And I can breathe. I like myself. She said, you know, to get here tonight and to go to school, she said, I don't have to sell myself, I don't have to sell my blood, and I didn't have to take a drink. She said, thank you, and went her way.
What do you think of yourself? What do you think of yourself? Any human being who is breathing should be able to walk tall. I remember meeting a principal of a high school in Alabama. He said, "Do you know what I do as a matter of practice?" He said, "I'll walk down a corridor, and any given student walking toward me," he said, "I've done this." He said, "I'll just stop a student and ask him bluntly, do you think, do you believe that you are a decent, nice person?" And he said, they all just, they have no immediate reply. They have to stop and think. What do you think of yourself? It's a wonderful thing for those who have experienced the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, who have had their faith in themselves restored, who do not have to function on chemicals, who do believe, who honestly believe that it is perfectly all right to hit a snag or two in life and to be able to face it and cope with it without chemicals. These people do walk tall and sleep easy. And I hope to heavens that each of us in this room can renew our faith in a God who will give us strength to do it, in friends who will help us to do it, and in our own dignity to get it done. I want to thank you for being here tonight and listening to me. Now, for those of you who might care to, I have a few comments to make on one of AA's slogans in about 15 minutes, so if you want to stay for that, fine. But anyway, thank you for being here.